This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guests today are from Equinox Software, who support and develop open source software in libraries, focusing on Evergreen, Koha, and the Fulfillment ILL system. The members of the team that I speak with are Mike Rylander, Jason Etheridge, and Galen Charlton. You can find them online at esilibrary.com.
I'm Mike Rylander from Equinox Software. I'm the president of the company and one of the founders and one of the original developers of Evergreen.
I'm Jason Etheridge. I'm the migrations and community manager for Equinox, and I'm also one of the original developers of Evergreen.
I'm Galen Charlton. I'm the infrastructure and added services manager for Equinox, and I am not one of the original founders.
I want to get started by just talking about ILSs in general, integrated library service systems, integrated library systems. I never say the whole thing out loud. What do you guys, since that's kind of what your thing is, what do you see that open source things like Koha and Evergreen can solve that the larger, big companies don't do quite as well at?
The main thing with software, people always talk about software as being feature complete or not feature complete. And from our point of view, software is never feature complete. It's whether it meets the needs of the users actively using the software or not. So when you could compare and contrast software, it's really more important whether it meets the needs of the people using the software or not. So there's other open source library software out there like Koha, for example. And Koha, the people who use Koha like Koha very much. The people who use proprietary products, maybe they like their products very much, maybe they don't. But for Equinox and for Evergreen, we're continuously engaging our user base, and we're improving the software to meet the needs of the people who actually use it. So there's not market forces that kind of change where Evergreen heads based on how we think we can sell it or widen its audience. Does that make sense?
And I think one of the things that distinguishes between Evergreen and Koha and some of the proprietary iOSs isn't necessarily so much the software. There's a lot in the iOS space that's, at least in broad outline, pretty commonly shared across the board. Basic modules, cataloging, circulation, UG acquisitions are all in place. There's a great deal of common understanding as to how some of the integration points should be. But where I think our focus is at Equinox and for open source software in general is we're not selling the product. We're not selling Evergreen. We're not selling Koha. We are essentially selling our services or the sweat of our brow. And what this means for our customers is that there's more opportunity to choose and slice and dice how they spend their iOS dollar. It's not that Evergreen and Koha is necessarily free of cost. It isn't. And it's not necessarily that it's necessarily going to be cheaper in every case. Often it is. Sometimes it isn't. But particularly for feature development, it does mean that if you want something, you can get it more directly than has typically been the case with proprietary companies and user enhancement committees and so on. It's the difference between joining a group to say, let's vote on features and eventually we'll get something we've asked for. But we don't have much direct influence as to when or what it may look like, versus with an open source model, whether you buy, whether you pay for somebody to do the coding for you, or if you do it yourself, that there's a much more direct impact and flow between you wanting something and getting it.
To give you a more concrete example of what Galen and Jason were talking about, the first ILSs to support the OpenSearch protocol, which was originally developed as by Amazon as a way to spur cross search engine compatibility through their A9 service, were Koha and Evergreen. And we did those actually together. I wrote the implementation for Evergreen, and at the time, one of the primary contributors to Koha wrote the version for that ILS. And then I built a client-side federated search prototype that could talk to both of those. And no other ILS was even thinking about reaching out to the broader technology world and looking for technologies to integrate the ILS with other search technologies. That most ILSs, if they had gone beyond Z39.50 for search in the back end, were focused on at that time making their finding some relevance ranking and making their A to Z listing work better. We knew that we needed to do those things, and we did those things, but we also knew that we also believed that it was critical to start pulling in technologies from the outside world. Nobody's ever heard of Z39.50 outside of building an ILS, but it's the core canonical mechanism for searching bibliographic data in the world, which means that nobody else is ever going to search bibliographic data except for ILSs if we stick with that. The first ILS to have any structured any linked data or schema.org. Yeah, the schema.org stuff. Evergreen got that. And Koha has it now as well, right? Pretty much happened coincident.
So the schema.org stuff that Mike mentioned. So schema.org is a vocabulary for putting in bits of metadata in a web page in a way that can be consumed by stupid computers. And this is an example of a collaborative project. Dan Scott of Laurentian University in Canada was the one who spearheaded schema.org support for both Evergreen and Koha. And you know, one of the use cases is to allow search engines such as Google to crawl library catalogs and ideally parse out whether at the time of the crawl, a given book or resource is available. And to my knowledge, Evergreen and Koha were the first, or at least among the first ILSs to have any level of schema.org support. And this was something that Dan Scott did in large part as part of a project during his recent sabbatical. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think open source supports is the ability to have several people be working on experimental development. You know, schema.org is perhaps still experimental in the sense of, you know, we don't know yet whether it will win out in terms of being the primary, you know, microdata format, but we've effectively, you know, done the experiment, and we'll see in due course.
And something that doing these experiments provides is momentum. So if we see out there three or four different competing potential standards, like we did for feeds back in the early 2000s. Implementations, reference implementations in open source systems help provide the momentum to propel the most straightforward ones, in the most common case, the more straightforward ones to succeed, simply by numbers. And the other thing is that it finds the potholes that proprietary vendors are unwilling to investigate to the point of finding. They don't want to run into a problem 6 months into development and find that they've hit a snag that's impossible to solve without going, without pulling in outside help. Outside help is the point of open source. So we come at problems from from basically the opposite direction.
This whole notion of openness and the lack of silos for, you know, the development community, the user community, that was one of the main instigators of us going open source in the first place. When Brad Lajeunesse from Pines and myself, we advocated for this. We wanted it to be widespread because we knew that's how it would be self-sustaining.
What I wanted to get into, and you started talking about this, Jason, is the development of Evergreen. You were there at the beginning. Do you remember how those conversations got started and how you convinced the state of Georgia to take on this project in the first place and how to make it, why you should make it open source?
I remember some of it, but I don't know how much of my memory is malleable. You know, so the story has evolved and been clarified, and there may be some revisionism there. But Brad Lajeunesse worked for Pines. He was the Pines System Administrator. And I was a friend of Brad's from college. And what I studied in college.
Can you say what Pines is for the listeners who may not know?
Pines is the statewide library consortium of public libraries for Georgia. It was a Y2K project, and it was an opportunity to bring libraries onto a shared system so that they could implement, for example, a statewide lending library card. So Pines was originally implemented with proprietary software, and I was hired on. At first, I was a contractor with GPLS to work around some of the limitations of the proprietary software. So, for example, I developed a reporting system that would add on to their existing legacy system, and it would use open source software. It would use MySQL and Apache, and it would just present the data in ways that they were not able to get to through the native reporting system. And in that same vein, after they hired me on as an actual employee of the state, we did similar software projects that would revolve around the library software. So, for example, we would have an improved mechanism for handling offline transactions. So when the system would go down, and it would go down quite often, it was a smoother experience for getting or for continuing to do the functions of a library and then uploading those transactions after the fact. But because of the success we had, I think we were able to convince the administration that we actually had technical prowess, that it was feasible to actually write your own software because we had done so. We proved it. And, we just kind of, you know, lobbied hard and we got our way.
And Evergreen, I think, was a pretty good success. As I recall from outside working in libraries in Georgia, it sort of was a module at a time. There would be a circulation module would come out, and then the acquisitions module would come out. And at what point do you think, I mean, I know this kind of project is never complete, but when do you think, at what point was Evergreen a complete, had every module my library would need kind of product?
Well, that didn't happen until a couple of years after Pines went live. The 2.0 release included included an acquisitions and a serials module, both in preview. And preview was the preview label was plastered all over it. But folks were so eager to use it that they just went ahead and tried it. And there, it was rough for the first couple minor releases in the 2.0. Series, but by 2.1 and 2.2, it was complete to the point where all of the various functionality was in use in libraries.
But it was a success from the start because our goals were to match the functionality that Pines had at the time. And at the time, they did not have functioning acquisitions with the proprietary software just because of the unique nature of Pines, of how widespread it was and the type of cataloging they did and so on.
So at a certain point, you guys decided to create Equinox. Can you tell me what point you decided to do that as a separate company and what exactly Equinox does?
Sure. So About 6 months after Pines went live, they started getting requests from other libraries, particularly state libraries, that wanted to do the same thing that Georgia had done, and from provincial libraries in Canada. And BC Sitka, the BC Libraries Cooperative now, they created a project called Sitka. That's the evergreen tree, primary evergreen tree in British Columbia. So they were going to move to a new proprietary system that nobody else was using yet, and that didn't happen. So in the wake of that, I think they decided they wanted to get out of the proprietary game as much as possible. And they came down to Georgia to meet with GPLS and see the Pines team and see what the software was doing for Pines and to see how it was run. And they asked if they could pay GPLS to essentially act as a support organization. And some other libraries wanted to do basically the same thing. But as a state organization, that's not something that they're built to do. So we decided to spin off a company to provide support to help grow the community and encourage others to use the software and provide a backstop for folks that needed assistance in doing that. And that's basically where Equinox came from.
And Galen, when did you come on board, and what is your role in Equinox now?
So prior to joining Equinox, I had worked for a couple of proprietary firms, primarily doing data migration, Endeavor and Ex Libris. Back in, I think, 2007, I had reached a point where I was actually feeling some ethical qualms working for a proprietary firm. So I had joined an open source COA, a COA support provider, Liblime. And that eventually led into some interesting issues in and of itself, which I want to go into. But in 2009, I started looking around. I'd been aware for a while of Evergreen as this sort of perhaps competitor to a COA, but never had the opportunity to really look into it. But summer 2009, I spoke to several of the founders, and in August jumped ship to Equinox. So one of the things we like to say at Equinox is everybody wears all other hats. So I've been doing, customer support, data migration, some development for both Evergreen and COA. And right now, my primary responsibility is to help keep our hosting infrastructure up. And I am also still an active Evergreen developer and an active COA contributor.
And that was something I wanted to ask you guys about. So you don't just do Evergreen, you work some with COA as well. Are there any other things that you guys cover besides, I know you help with implementation of both of those? Is there anything else kind of in the mix? Is that the main things you guys do?
Those are the two that we focus on right now, though we did develop under contract a product called Fulfillment. It is based on the Evergreen code base, but its purpose is to fill the niche of an ILL system. It works in a way similar to some of the proprietary ILL systems in that you feed it all of the information that you can, and it makes use of all of that information to decide which is the best copy available or the best copy for the patron, which is different from the traditional external ILL where You say, I need a copy of this book, and you throw it over the wall, and somebody will eventually pick it up and try to fill the request. It's meant for consortia that either can't currently or don't want to move to Evergreen or Koha, particularly Evergreen, to do resource sharing, but they want to be able to do the type of resource sharing that Evergreen provides and allows. So that's a third product that we're working on, and outside of those major core library software solutions, we are shifting a focus to third-party integration as well. So just like in the early days when we would implement new and experimental protocols, or not even in the early days, even with the schema.org pieces that the Evergreen community is putting in place, we're at Equinox looking for ways to allow the software, both Evergreen and Koha, to make use of third-party services more effectively, so that particularly our customers, but the communities as a whole, will be able to spend less and get more bang for their buck when they use these open source solutions, because the cost of integrating external services like ebooks and record management, things like that, are already taken care of by community code.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for an example. So it's things like integrating ebooks into the catalog. Is that the kind of third-party services you're talking about? Or is there other kinds of third parties?
So, yeah, ebook integration is certainly a big area, especially nowadays, and especially since many of the ebook providers are starting to release APIs to make some of the deeper integrations possible. But other areas that we work in and seek out partners include data services. So authority control would be a big example, as well as integrations with devices that people might want to hook up, RFID checkout stations, self checkout things, and the like. And I think more broadly, we very much see the trend that iOS can't afford to be an island. So this applies both to content services like ebooks, but also very much to metadata. And one of the things that we're doing is starting down the road of turning Evergreen in particular into a hybrid system that can both ingest ordinary MARC as well as expose linked data and ingest it. And there are similar efforts, not involving us so much in the CoS space.
One of the reasons that we feel it's important that an entity like Equinox exists within a community, particularly a community similar to the Evergreen one, is that there are a lot of folks that want to do work on the next big thing. Dan Scott kind of led the effort on the schema.org piece, and that's important to do, and it's important for a lot of reasons, but there's the other end of the spectrum is making sure that the RFID pads work with the SIP2 server, making sure that security is a focus, making sure that the boring stuff in the back end continues to work. That's something that we can help the community make sure those things happen, as opposed to the sexy stuff.
Well, you brought up something else that I was going to ask about anyway, but sort of the secure part of it. Do you have a focus on that, of keeping, especially when you're talking about patron accounts, of keeping data secure and private? What kind of efforts go into that kind of issue?
No, security has always been a focus. The original authentication mechanism for Evergreen it's not super advanced, but it was designed to avoid ever passing a password clear text over the network, even over an encrypted channel. The idea being, even if a user or a system administrator decides not to use HTTPS for the login page, the patron's password's never exposed. So that, you know, just as an example of the early focus that we had on security. Well, actually, I think Galen can talk more about this. He's been involved in some NISO committees recently, specifically regarding patron privacy.
Like Mike said, I've been involved in patron privacy work. In part contributing on an ISO committee to come up with some privacy principles that we're hoping to get libraries, content providers, and service providers like Equinox to agree on. I also helped kickstart the Patron Privacy Technologies Interest Group at AOA. And where I think I see a role for service providers and Equinox in particular is to, not only reflect what libraries are trying to do in terms of protecting patron privacy, but to try to more actively help push the state of the art. For example, take SIP2 as a protocol. Back in the day, 3M undoubtedly just had the use case of a self-checkout machine communicating over a serial line to an iOS located at the library. And of course, that's fine. That's reasonably secure. One typically doesn't expect somebody to try to tap his serial lines within a library. But of course, SIP2 became an internet protocol. And it's fairly old. It was never designed with encryption in mind. So that means that if you're using SIP2 over the internet, you're potentially exposing patron contact information, fines, passwords, and so on to anybody who cares to snoop. So one of the things that we're doing is working with other SIP2 clients to make the best of a bad thing and move all of our customers. The goal is to move all of our customers to a mode where if they have to use SIP2 because there's no other alternative, that it at least will be over an encrypted connection. And I think this is something where, as a provider who also does hosting, we can help provide some technical leadership.
So one important thing to know about security is it's more of a process than a product. And everything technical that we're doing to improve security with Evergreen and Koha, it's important. But we also provide more functional avenues for, say, administration to tighten security at their libraries. So one of the features of Evergreen is the permission system is very granular. There's inheritance. You can define permission groups that have a hierarchy. So you have, for example, let's say there's a circulators group. Beneath that, you could have a different, more specific circulator subgroup. And these circulator subgroup will inherit the permissions of the parent group. And Evergreen is like that in a lot of areas where there's a hierarchy and where there's inheritance. And this is just to manage complexity. And that helps with security, being able to define your processes like that.
How many installations do you guys have now? Just a rough number if you don't know the exact.
Well, Equinox customers, we have about 870 libraries. Several of those, lots of those are inside of consortia. We have approximately 50 support customers and a total of 75 or so active customers of various things, development and support primarily. There are over 1,600 libraries using Evergreen today, and the vast majority of those are in North America. Hosted customers, I believe we have about 35. Is that right? And then we have a good number of Koha customers as well, both self-hosted and that we host. Do you have the numbers on? Do you recall the approximate numbers on those, Galen, on the Koha ones?
Yeah. So now we have about 30 Koha libraries, self-hosted or hosted by us. So, I think it's fair to say that our beginnings was Evergreen, and that remains certainly the larger part of our customer base. But we do. One of the other reasons why we work in the Koha space is to provide options. There are lots of stereotypes that sometimes get bandied about that, for example, Evergreen is just for large statewide consortia, and Evergreen is just for small libraries that fit the profile of the library in New Zealand that started Koha. These stereotypes are often misleading. There are both very tiny libraries using Evergreen and consortia using Koha. While we do have some tendencies. I mean, if somebody is a resource sharing a consortium, we're more likely to recommend Evergreen. Both the systems have our strengths and weaknesses, and as part of providing options, we recognize that even within open source, a single project can't necessarily serve the needs of all library types. So that's why we've branched out.
Was the decision to support Koha there from the beginning, like when you guys decided to start doing the Evergreen implementation as a separate company, was Koha part of that, something that you wanted to do, or was it just something that came later? How did that get added in, that you were going to do more than just Evergreen implementation and support?
From a business perspective, initially, no. Koha really wasn't in the cards for us. Not because we disliked the project. We worked with the folks on the Koha project from the beginning of Evergreen. It seemed that there were enough well-established and relatively mature Koha support organizations, and entering into that wouldn't necessarily gain us anything. And we didn't want to be a provider that couldn't provide top service. So we were initially all Evergreen developers and an all Evergreen shop. So it didn't make sense for us, didn't make sense for the community. When we hired Galen, that changed significantly. Galen's a core committer on the Koha project, which means something different in Koha and Evergreen, but Galen's a thought leader in the Koha community, and there's a benefit to us to help Galen stay involved in that community, and to the community to have Galen. So he began transferring his knowledge to our support folks, and they've all picked it up very quickly, and we're very happy with where Koha has helped us go from a support organization perspective.
And also the other reason is that I think it's a very good idea to be in a position of being able to borrow the best ideas. As it happens, both Koa and Evergreen, you know, have a significant portion of their code written in Perl. So it happens to be the case that there's opportunity for even for direct code sharing. One example of that is the SIP2 support, which was written by, I think, David Fiander under contract to GPLs for Evergreen, which subsequently got borrowed by Koa as the core of Koa's SIP2 support. Another example is the search engine's query parser for Evergreen also got adopted by Koa. In terms of ideas flowing the other direction, as an Evergreen developer, I've always been very sensitive towards where I can, putting in some of Koa's ease of configuration and ease of tweaking OPAC displays into Evergreen. So from a development point of view, since we're well past the point where it was just four people in the equivalent of a garage, and Mike, you'll have to tell me what the original office space was like, but being able to look at multiple projects has been of benefit to us.
Well, looking into the future, what sort of short term, what do you guys have besides fulfillment you were talking about? Is there anything, new features you're getting ready to add to Evergreen, or anything more longer term that you'd want to discuss on the podcast that you'd want to move Evergreen/Equinox into?
On the development side with Evergreen, Galen and I we've been focusing on the creation of the web staff client. Evergreen today uses a standalone, separately installed staff client that's built on top of the same technology that Firefox is. It's called Zool Runner, and it used to be a standalone project that the Mozilla Foundation used to build several different things. They built Thunderbird on top of it, their mail client, and of course Firefox, and there were some external projects too. Songbird was a desktop MP3 player that was built on top of Zool Runner, and the Evergreen staff client is. There have been changes to the infrastructure of Zool Runner over the years that were good things to do. They were all essentially security related, but they've reduced the amount of flexibility and functionality available to remote applications like Evergreen. So we're with the advent of HTML5 and some more modern and robust web infrastructures and toolkits, we're moving to a purely web-based staff client. Equinox is doing all of the technical development on that, and we're in the middle of sprints 2 and 3 of 6 to get that done, and we're looking to have that done early next year. That will be a sea change in the way that staff interact with Evergreen, so that is going to be a big thing when it's finally ready to roll to production. There are lots of smaller development projects that we're involved with. Well, not necessarily small, but smaller than the web staff client rewriting the entire UI. I'm over the next couple weeks, I'll be building the core of a new relevance ranking engine that takes into account statistical information that we can derive from circulation and hold data, temporal information, how new certain records in the database are, And in the long run, we want to build a whole set of recommendation and rating by staff and potentially patrons on top of that as well. So that's going to be exciting. That will augment the already pretty decent relevance ranking that Evergreen does for the baseline search today. So that should be exciting. That will be out in the spring of next year.
In addition to the ongoing projects that Mike mentioned, some directions in the longer term. Linked data, as a focus, has obviously been pretty important in libraries for the past few years. Especially since, especially at the point where people realized that RDA needed to be a bit more than just AACR3. But of course, in the iOS space, there's been a lot of questions as to what linked data will actually look like, particularly for public libraries who are not necessarily, as a whole, going to be investing millions of dollars in exploratory research. So one of the directions I see Evergreen and Yako are going in as being exemplar hybrids, by which I mean systems that both speak a mark for as long as the half-life of mark continues. Sorry, Roy Tennant, and as well as being a, both linked data consumers and providers. So I've been involved in putting in some small bits and other margins. A lot of the work that Dan Scott has been doing is directly relevant as well. But it's the sort of thing where open source means both that we have room to experiment, but also because in the end, in the final analysis, Equinox is a services a company that we also will depend on where the libraries we serve, how they want us to go. So for us, it's kind of this interesting tension between seeing some directions where we would like to push and or lead the way, and also seeing that that because everything we do has to be paid for, seeing what directions that our customers end up suggesting.
Outside of Equinox, the Evergreen community has been really maturing, and I expect to see that continue. They've been engaging in outreach. For the first time, they actually had an Evergreen booth at ALA. There's all sorts of interest groups that form. People are really championing things like improving documentation, and they're working together. And it's new blood. It's people coming into Evergreen, all the time and actually helping and participating, and not just using the software as if it was a proprietary product.
Well, that's great, because that's sort of what libraries are, to bring communities together. So it's nice that happens internally as well with us. I think that's it. So, guys, thank you so much for talking to me. And I hope you keep up the good work. Again, I've been outside of it looking in, and it's always been a really interesting project.
Well, thank you for your time, too. It's been good to meet you and good to talk to you.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you very much.
If you'd like to learn more about the show or listen to past episodes, you can visit circulatingideas.com or follow us on Twitter at CircIdeas. We're also on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can drop us a line at mail@circulatingideas.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and keep circulating the ideas.
That's important, the audio right there.